You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from WHYY in Philadelphia. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-hosts Mark Sonnenfeld, Morgan Lewis, Peter Snelling, Merrill Lynch, Andrew Hanlon, Hanlon Creative, Mary Pat Kessler, Saber Systems, and Frank Arcara from Alliant. And, Peter, will you please give us a rundown on who we have on the air today, please?
Sure will, Herb. We have Lisa Allmiller, founder, House Paws Mobile Veterinary Service, Anuj Gupta, general manager, Reading Terminal Market, and Dan Tropiano, CEO, United Healthcare, Pennsylvania and Delaware, and Elizabeth Convery, founder, Very Real Estate.
Excellent. Let's get to know Lisa Allmiller, founder of House Paws Mobile Veterinary Service. Lisa, what is House Paws Mobile Veterinary Service?
House Paws is a veterinary service that comes into the home to treat the patient. So we do everything from wellness care to sick care to ultrasounds, x-rays, everything in the patient's home.
So where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Louisville, Kentucky.
And tell us about what growing up in Louisville, Kentucky was like as a little girl and how that may have influenced your thing with pets.
Louisville was pretty fantastic. I just remember open fields and forest and lots of exploration of nature. And I was the kid that would catch toads, salamanders, crayfish, and each one bring home and say, "Can I have this one, Daddy?" And each one I had to return.
I see. All right. Mary Pat.
How young were you when you knew you were going to be Dr. Lisa?
I don't remember not wanting to be Dr. Lisa, but I just heard a videotape of a tape recording of myself with my dad interviewing me when I was 4, and he said, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And I said, "Dr. Lisa." So I guess as early as 4.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was it about being Dr. Lisa that was so appealing to you?
I always wanted to be a veterinarian, so I think I just wanted to work with animals and treat them. When mm-hmm. I was little, some of my pets I remember going to the vet and then being put to sleep like mice and rats and things like that, and I didn't want to ever do that. I wanted to help little kids have their pets, like I wanted to fix them.
Lisa, how young were you when you knew you could talk to animals?
I actually don't think it was ever a question. I think I always knew that you could talk to animals.
And do they talk back?
So you understand animals. When you are playing veterinarian, you understand what these animals need? You have an intuitive sense?
Yeah, I think that I do. I think that I always looked at their environments, and I think that I would look at how they reacted to their environments, and I was just a piece of their environment. So I think I did have that intuitive
sense.
So
when you're going to somebody's home, you're really seeing the whole lot. You're seeing more about the pet, the animal, what the real environment is, what food they're eating, et cetera, et cetera.
That's the beauty of it. There's nothing more holistic than seeing the pet's entire environment and how they move and react and mm-hmm. where they're sleeping and eating and
so
everything.
You're really picking up on the whole, you have a holistic perspective of the animal.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Frank?
Lisa, your mother had an interesting career. Could you share with us what she did and how what you take with you every day to work?
Yeah, my mom actually was the main, I guess, worker of the family, and she worked long shifts, but she was a risk manager at the VA hospital here in Philly, and she was an ER nurse before that, but patient care, advocating for patients was what her job was. She was the liaison between the doctor and the patient if there was ever a concern.
And what's that have to do with what you're doing?
I feel like I advocate for my patients every day because owners don't know what they need or what they want, and I get to teach them about the best things for their pets.
Wow. So you're able to understand, well, maybe even, you know, listen, it's like every year I got to have my pet inspected. You're telling me maybe you should be feeding them something different. You're going to be pointing out stuff that I may not have been aware of.
Yes, yes, mm-hmm. all kinds of things.
Drew?
Lisa, you told us a story that your dad kind of taught you a valuable lesson when you were younger about money. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah, we were at a Mexican restaurant, and he gave me a jalapeno pepper, and he said, "I'll give you $1 to eat this whole thing in one bite." And, of course, I was so anxious for the dollar, so I did one chomp, and of course, it was awful. And the lesson was, don't be stupid for money. That's just what he said. Don't ever be stupid for money.
And can you tell the listening audience sort of how that has parlayed itself into your business today?
I teach my staff, and I truly believe that you earn money when you're passionate about what you're doing. I think if you're passionate, like, money will come. But I think that you have to, like, invest yourself into what you're doing, and that will drive the business. I don't look at making money. I look at doing the right thing, and money will come.
Mark?
Lisa, tell us about your relationship with your pets as a kid.
As a kid, well, there wasn't a lot of kids in Louisville, so they were my friends. So, you know, if I had a guinea pig, I'd build mazes for them. I don't think that I knew that I was providing environmental enrichment for them, but pretty much like every pet that I had, we went on some sort of crazy adventure together.
How did you know what your pets needed?
Again, I think it was kind of intuitive. I would research things. Of course, back then they didn't have online, but if I had a rat, I would get a book on rats. My dad was an educator, so he would always try to get me to read, and that was one thing that he would help me do, is he'd give me that sort of information.
So there's different kinds of animals. You have mammals, amphibians, reptiles. So is there a special type of, are there certain kinds of pets you do and don't care for, animals you don't care for? Do?
The only animal I can't care for is humans, but mm-hmm. all the other ones I'm always open to treat.
So you're able to tune in whether somebody has a pet parrot, a pet snake, a pet, whatever it might be, you're just tuning in.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so you're visiting people's homes.
Yes.
And you're going into their homes, and you're talking to the folks first, or you're talking to the animal first. You're getting a sense of the animal. First.
Generally, I greet the animal first. If there's a child, that will be second, and then the adult would be the
Why?
Last. I think that's just the right way to do it. I think that you want the pet to feel comfortable. Certainly, if there's a child present, you want the child to feel comfortable. They like to play veterinarian, so it's always great to engage the child in the whole process, and it's scary. Like, doctors are scary to children, but some reason veterinarians aren't. They want to be...
Can you see a correlation between the children and the parents and the home and the pet?
Yes.
What are you talking about?
I think the interactions of the whole family are different in regards to the pet, and I think that assessing their relationship with each other and with the pet can really influence things, especially if, like, with behavior issues and things like that, if they're having problems in the home.
Is there such a thing as a well-adjusted adopted pet?
Absolutely.
What do you mean?
There's some pets that just move into a new environment and they're adjusted. There's other pets that need the family and the environment to, like, help them become adjusted. But that's one way that seeing the environment really helps, and it helps with me teaching the family about how to get that pet adjusted.
Do pets have personalities like people?
Absolutely.
What do you mean?
Some pets are introverted and some pets are extroverted, and that's some things that you think people would know that, but they don't. So sometimes just explaining to someone, like, every dog's not the soccer dog. Like, this dog is just like your child who's, like, the artistic introvert. You're not always going to have the football player kid that wants to do everything. Sometimes when they just hear that, it changes their whole perspective, because they're trying to force, like, a round peg into a square hole.
We realize in doing these CO interviews that birth order sometimes affects people. Does birth order affect animals?
That's a good question. I don't think so. I think mm-hmm. they all, especially many animals are born in a litter situation, so I think they all come out maybe right after each other, but they're all kind of fighting for the same, like, mm-hmm. food, affection, whatever mm-hmm. whatever it is.
Lisa, you seem to lead by always doing the right thing, and I'm just curious, did that come into play when you decided to go to people's homes instead of having pets come in, you know, to a vet? Because I know for my dog, I'm very scared to go to the vet, so you've made it a lot easier to treat the animal.
You know, I read a James Herriot book when I was very young, and it was just so, I hate to say romantic, but it was so romantic to me, the idea of treating the pets in the home. And it's even for the people. The people have so much anxiety, you know, that the putting them in the box or putting them in the car.
How does it make you feel to go into somebody's home and have the pet be able to act as themselves as opposed to being nervous?
It's an amazing experience going into the home. The owners are happy. The pets think we're there for a friendly visit. They don't even know what's going on. Like, they don't even assess us as a veterinarian. We smell great. And
what an innovative idea, really, you know.
Yeah, it's really a great experience.
You're a very strong-willed person, and I'm wondering how you influence the owners when you see that that's the issue mm-hmm. rather than the pet's wellness.
The owners in general, I think, love their pets so much that they really are sponges for knowledge. So people love to show me what's in their cabinets, their toys, their litter boxes. They love to go into the backyard and see what I'm seeing. So I find that most owners are just, like, thirsty for knowledge.
So it sounds like a great partnership.
Yeah, it really is.
Lisa, what's the website address for House Paws Mobile Veterinary Service?
Housepaws.us.
Let me have that one more time.
Housepaws.us.
We've been speaking with Lisa Allmiller, founder of House Paws Mobile Veterinary Service, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website. It's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. Executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment, right after this business spotlight. And your name and organization is?
Anuj Gupta, Reading Terminal Market.
And I understand the Reading Terminal Market has a new service that it's offering. What is that service?
So we now provide online shopping and delivery to a 16-mile radius from the market, including right. New Jersey.
Tell me a little bit more about that. How many vendors do you have there, and how many different types of food, and so on and so forth?
We just added our 36th vendor. Basically, any part of the fresh food side of the market, you can now purchase online.
And these are from a wide variety of cultures and cuisines. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, it's more, it's not so much the prepared foods. Uh-huh. It's our butchers, it's our produce vendors, it's our cheesemongers, seafood stores.
Give me that list again.
Produce, meats, seafood, cheese, and many other things.
These are really, it's all fresh, though. I mean, it's one of the things that makes the market very special, as well as different cuisines. So as opposed to, if you can't get to the Reading Terminal Market, you can order online.
You can order online, and starting today, we just introduced a new service where you can shop at the market, bring us your bags, and we'll have your bags delivered to your house.
Wait a minute. So you're telling me I don't have to carry the bags home anymore?
You don't have to carry the bags. You don't have to drive to the market.
And I can shop online. And are there new specials and different types of foods being advertised online every day or every week?
There are, and our merchants always have specials. We're doing a promotion for February where we will deliver your bags for free if you shop in the market.
Oh, my gosh. This is wonderful.
And that's 16-mile radius also.
16-mile radius, and these are a wide variety. That's sort of cool. What's the website address for the Reading Terminal Market?
ReadingTerminalMarket.org.
And this is the site where you go online in case you want to have you want to have it delivered or have your bags. I guess if you're there, going to have your bags delivered. Let me have that one more time, the website.
ReadingTerminalMarket.org.
ReadingTerminalMarket.org. We're speaking with Anuj Gupta, General Manager, Reading Terminal Market. And your name and company is?
Peter Snelling with Merrill Lynch.
And Peter, what do you do for a living?
Well, our group provides wealth management and retirement planning services for companies, their employees, and executives.
So you're helping companies, their employees, and their executives with their wealth management. And what kind of stuff does that encompass?
Well, we focus on goals-based wealth management, which really means trying to find what is most important to people about their money and then proposing solutions to meet their needs.
When you say helping them with their money, so it's like, so they're planning for marriage and they're planning for anniversaries and weddings.
Educating
and
children, retirement, helping
the whole life
parents, helping
money.
Children.
What's the website address of this organization?
That is ml.com.
And let me have your name one more time.
Peter Snelling with Merrill Lynch.
Peter Snelling with Merrill Lynch. And the website address one last time?
Is ml.com.
ml.com. And this has been your business spotlight. We'll be back in a moment. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohn. We'd like to introduce Anuj Gupta, who's the General Manager of the Reading Terminal Market. Anuj, what is the Reading Terminal Market?
So, Reading Terminal is one of the country's largest and oldest operating public markets. It's a nonprofit right in the heart of Center City, Philadelphia.
How many visitors did you have last year?
Last year, we surpassed 7.3 million, more than the Liberty Bell and Art Museum combined.
Wow, 7.3 million visitors. All right, Drew.
Anuj, there was a lot going on at your dinner table when you were growing up. Can you first just tell us about the cuisine and why it was important to sit down with the family?
Well, dinner was a big ordeal. Every night was a different cuisine. My parents are essentially self-taught gourmet chefs, and so you were not allowed to miss dinner, and you had to sit down and have all elements of it.
And there was also some business strategy going on at the dinner table. Can you tell us about that?
My parents, while working full-time, started a pioneer pioneering business. They created one of the first lines of shelf-stable prepared Indian foods you can find anywhere in the country. And dinner time was often the time they had to talk about the business.
And if there was, you know, one key takeaway that you learned during those strategy sessions, what would that have been?
Well, I think the most important lesson was not to take – no one's going to hand anything to you, and don't take anything for granted.
And what does that mean for you today in your leadership?
It means anything that you identify as a goal, you're going to have to realize it yourself. I mean, nothing is just going to be served to you on a silver platter.
Peter?
Anuj, how many businesses are there at Reading Terminal, and who are some of the newest ones?
There are about 80 businesses. They're all small, family-owned, unique Philadelphia businesses. This year, we brought in the first two Latino-owned businesses in the market's history. We also brought in the first two Muslim-owned businesses.
That's very interesting. Why is that important?
Well, I'm out there saying that this is Philadelphia's market, and I wanted to represent our city. Our city's been diversifying at a pace we haven't seen in about 100 years, and it's important to represent that at Reading Terminal.
Mm-hmm. Mary Pat?
Anuj, how young were you when inclusion was important?
Definitely around 12, 13, 14 years old. There are a variety of public events I think I was influenced by.
Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, first of all, I grew up in a very non-diverse area, western suburbs of Philadelphia. I was one of four South Asian kids in my school. So inclusion is in my, or lack thereof, is in my face every day. And I think there were a variety of events like the L.A. riots. George Bush Sr. was president at the time. The way he administered some of the issues that the country was facing really, in my mind, raised the need for a diverse set of folks at the table.
And so what did you do with that? You know, how did that mold your future?
Well, that drove my desire to be in public service and make an impact on the world I'm living in.
Mark?
Anuj, why did you go to law school?
Because I knew it could be a strong foundation for public service and to work in the public sector.
And how did you get from real estate law to the Reading Terminal market?
Well, there's several steps in between, but real estate law, I represented landlords, I represented small businesses, I represented affordable housing developers and helped developers get their deals done. So I know a fair amount about facility management. I know a fair amount about getting a transaction done for a small business. And all of that's very relevant to what I do with the market.
Frank?
Anuj, you have a passion for cities, a passion you say started in your parents' basement. Can you tell us more about that?
So I took probably 50% of my parents' basement, and I built my own city there, and it had a residential community, it had a commercial section, it had its own power grid, had its own airport, and I would just spend hours upon hours playing in that city trying to improve it.
What do you mean trying to improve it? What are you talking about?
Well, if I would sometimes pretend that there were alien attacks on the city, and so how would I respond as sort of the executor of the city to bring it back to life and rejuvenate it?
Aside from the aliens potentially attacking you, what else would you do?
I was constantly building and adding new sections to it.
Were there certain sections that you added that would help build the other sections?
Definitely when I identified a self-sustaining power grid, it was my electric railroad, which went in circles, and I pretended that the heat generated from the tracks was used to power the entire grid.
How young were you when you were doing this?
I think like 10, 11.
Isn't this fundamentally what mall developers do, figuring out where the stores go, and also strip center developers figuring out where different stores should go? It sounds like, you know, you're 4 or 5 years old. You're really envisioning, retail layout. Now, what's that have to do with the Reading Terminal market, though?
The market is much more than just a private retail enterprise. It is a nonprofit. It's a really important part of Philadelphia's social fabric, civic culture.
What do you mean it's social fabric? You go there, eat there. What are you talking about?
You won't find another place, certainly in the Philadelphia region, I would argue across the nation, where every race, every nationality, every ethnicity, every religion, the entire income spectrum is all coming and using our halls in the same way at the same time. We are the largest redemption site for the Supplemental Nutrition Access Program, otherwise known as food stamps, in the state of Pennsylvania. So just to highlight that, we serve a very important food access mission for neighborhoods across Philadelphia on a daily basis. that's just one example of the diversity that we have in the market. You don't find public spaces that bring together that many diverse stakeholders at the same time, in the same way.
Yeah, I've met friends there. We've hung out at the Reading Terminal Market because we wanted something interesting to eat and a special environment to hang out in. There's nothing like it. It's like, talk about diversity and interesting. There's nothing ever the same there. And it's not just the food, it's the people hanging around. Am I seeing that correctly?
That's exactly right. And we've had famous sociologist Elijah Anderson. He was a professor at Penn for many years, studied the market as a model to facilitate interaction across barriers and across diverse communities.
Anoush, does the market represent every neighborhood, every culture in the city in some way?
I can't say we're there yet, but I'm working on it.
Anoush, I want to go back to when you were 12 or 13. There was sort of an impactful moment, and that was the L.A. riots.
Yeah.
And I just want to ask, like, why did that impact you? And what were
because,
you thinking?
Because, I'll tell you why. I remember talking about it in high school, and the discussion was entirely focused on the consequences of the riots. And don't get me wrong, there was a lot of damage done in the city and a lot of havoc created. But no one was talking about why these folks were rioting. And why was the Rodney King indictment, or the whatever the outcome was of the matter, why was that the catalyst for people to burst out with this energy? Why weren't we talking about why folks in Compton felt so repressed for presumably for decades that they had to lash out in this manner?
Can you see how, like, looking that deep into that has kind of affected your leadership and what you're doing today?
Absolutely. I mean, it seems like
everything you describe at the Reading Terminal Market is sort of combating what happened there.
Well, in a small way.
Or understanding it. It sounds to me like, you know, from the age of four, building his own little cities, he's really understanding. He's taking a look at the underlyments of why things are really occurring.
Is it important to you that that never happens again?
My career goal is to focus on this city and improving it for everyone that lives here.
But when you
and
say
right
improving
now,
it, what's improving it mean? What's that mean?
It means a variety of things, but at the end of the day, I want this to be a place where it doesn't matter where you're born, what race you are, what your background is, you have a shot at whatever it is you want to do as a resident of Philadelphia. And right now, in addition to making sure that our great merchants do well, the market is a place that sort of represents a lot of those goals.
How does it make you feel to see people come there as a destination that have a lot of money, and then people with food stamps come there?
I'm really proud of that.
I bet.
What do you mean?
As I said before, you are hard-pressed to find public spaces like that in America today, and especially at a time when we are splitting along every line you can imagine, including political. It is really important to have a place like that.
Where do you eat lunch?
All 80.
Uh-huh. So you really enjoy what you do. Did you work Saturdays and Sundays?
I do.
Uh-huh. Why?
Yeah.
Do you have to?
Well, Saturdays are the busiest day at the market,
mm-hmm.
and it would be I couldn't do my job if I don't know what's going on in the organization. So I work every other Saturday. My predecessor worked every Saturday. I've got two small kids.
So you go in and you're like, you're walking around, you're talking to the merchants, you're watching what's going on with the traffic. Well, what's the website address for the Reading Terminal Market?
ReadingTerminalMarket.org.
Let me have that one more time.
ReadingTerminalMarket.org.
ReadingTerminalMarket.org. We've been speaking with Anoush Gupta, who's the general manager of the Reading Terminal Market here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. To learn more about our executive leaders, we will be back in a moment, right after this break. Want to help building your business with help from this show's CEOs? Our CEOs can help you uncover more opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that. They've succeeded in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars, and some are available to advise you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. The same CEOs you've heard on the show for 10 years may be willing to help you build your business, uncover new opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues. because our CEOs have been there and done that, succeeding in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars. And some are available to advise you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. And your name is?
Hank Boyer, Boyer Management Group.
And Hank, I hear that half the workforce is looking for a new job nowadays. What's going on there?
Well, there's a couple of things. The economy's booming right now, and there's been, for the last 10 years, a pent-up desire to change jobs. So that's now coming about because the economy's booming. And employers are very aggressive in poaching talent from other companies.
So what's that mean for employers, the fact that the economy's booming, and that some folks have a pent-up desire to change jobs, and you know, employers are poaching other employers' talent? What that means?
There's going to be a massive disruption here, and the first part that is going to be felt is the service levels to customers. You're losing people that are experienced, and now you're replacing them with people that don't have the experience. But then there's a huge cost to replace the talent that you lose. When you lose somebody that's even halfway decent, it's going to cost 25% to 40% of the first year's compensation just to pay for that, and that's going to precipitate a lot of pressure to fill positions, and that means bad hires, which is also a problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, so what can employers do?
Well, three things, I think. First of all, employers have to assess their risks, figure out why the talent is leaving, and it's going to be different for different organizations. They've got to implement retention programs, and that probably means retraining managers on how to do those things, and they're going to have to revise their hiring practices so that they're attracting the right people, they're getting them on board, and they're taking care of them.
So give me a quick recap of all that again.
Well, the economy is just opening up a lot of movement within the workforce today, and that's going to have some pretty bad things happen to businesses if they don't take action right now to make sure that they're not being adversely affected.
What's the website address for your organization?
BoyerManagement.com.
Let me have that one more time.
Boyer Management, B-O-Y-E-R Management.com.
And we've been speaking with Hank Boyer, Boyer Management, here on Executive Leaders Radio. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohn. We'd like to introduce Dan Tropiano, who's the CEO of United Healthcare of Pennsylvania and Delaware. Dan, what is United Healthcare of Pennsylvania and Delaware?
United Healthcare is healthcare coverage and insurance for employees, Medicaid, and Medicare individuals.
How many folks are covered under your plans?
About 1.1 million across the Commonwealth.
And how large or how small is the team?
Extended team is about 1,500. Immediate team, about 30.
All right. Where are you from originally?
Northern New Jersey.
How many brothers and sisters?
One older brother.
And Drew?
Dan, your dad was influential to you when you were growing up. Can you tell us a little about him?
Well, my father's an Italian immigrant. Came here in 1959. I would say the typical immigrant story. Didn't know the language, no money when he came here, and built his own construction business up over a course of many years.
And did you ever work with your dad?
As long as I can remember. I can remember being quite young, being on construction sites and being told, here's a good nail, this is a bad nail, bad nails go in this bucket, good nails go in that bucket.
And what was the one key takeaway from your dad? Like, what was the one trait that he had?
Most of all, it was hard work. Obviously, he had some gaps in education and knowing the language, reading, writing. I would say he hard worked his way through any setbacks or things he had going against him.
Peter?
Dan, you lead a very complex business. How do you not lose sight of the ultimate goal, the patient?
Well, the member or the patient is always first and foremost in our mind. Again, I am pretty far displaced from it, but part of my job is to understand the big picture and what we have to do on our end to positively influence them on their end and all the pieces and mechanisms in the middle to make that happen.
Mary Pat?
Positively.
Dan, did your dad also have this ability that you to see all the moving parts, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, if you're building a house, you're starting with a bare piece of land. You have to be able to see the final product that's going to come from that and all the complexities that go into it along the way and the different work and the different workers and the different talents and personalities that you have to deal with along the way. So you have to be able to see how that's all going to come together for a final positive
end product.
That's
interesting, because earlier when we were talking in the green room, you told me that you found out that you had the ability to, quote-unquote, see all the moving pieces at once. And I can understand how you need that as the CEO, because there's a lot of moving pieces, as Peter pointed out. But it's also interesting that your dad had to have that ability as well. Your dad was an Italian immigrant who said he didn't speak English that well?
Initially, no, and he still has his challenges.
And I guess he was doing a lot of stuff in his head.
Yeah, he that's a good point. I mean, I never really saw him write much down or refer back to some type of roadmap. I think he learned by observing and then applying.
That's interesting. So you have that same ability. It's interesting that the CEO of a substantial and well-respected healthcare firm has the same abilities as his dad, who was building homes, to be able to see it in your head. That's fascinating.
Speaking of your parents, how about your mom? You know, you told us in the green room your mom was gritty. Can you describe how she showed that?
Yeah, so my mom was a homemaker. She did help my father out in the business, primarily with the bookkeeping part of it. But she had a lot of grit, and she was very forceful, and had that extra something that drove her to succeed at whatever she was doing, whether it was helping out with the business or raising us on a daily basis.
And when you're building your leadership team and your talent around you, is grit something that you think is important?
Absolutely. And actually, as an organization, we've talked about the quality of grit in the big picture, in the process of hiring, our diversity, and what we're looking for in all of our employees, regardless of position.
Frank?
Dan, I want to come back to the construction site for a moment. What lessons did you learn there that you can apply to managing a healthcare company?
You know, I think everything in life is on a construction site. Again, you're dealing with very diverse talents. You know, from what a mason does and a carpenter does and a roofer does are very different. And you're learning how to put all those talents together and come to an end goal, bring together a multitude of different talents.
Didn't you also mention that, you know, on the construction site there's people of all different races and sexes and so on and so forth, and it's also like building a company. You have to understand how to get people working. There was some connection there?
Yeah, and again, much different. Different skill sets, much different ethnicities. I could remember, you know, for whatever reasons, most of the guys who did in the masonry work were Portuguese. Most of the carpenters were Italian. So, and many immigrants you were dealing with, so they were still very ethnic.
So your dad had to understand how to work with everybody and how to coordinate everybody. Does that have anything to do with what you're doing nowadays?
It's what I do every day.
What do you mean?
You know, the most challenging part of the job is not dealing with the computer that's very, you know, singular, or even the books or the finances. Those are numbers. They are what they are. It's dealing with people and the different personalities and finding ways to motivate them, encourage them, and help them see the vision that we're trying to accomplish.
So it's interesting. Your dad was able to see things, the big picture in his head. You are. Your dad was able to work with a wide variety of people and be able to set up some processes, which is a lot like what you're doing nowadays. It's sort of interesting to see the parallels between, you know, the guy who's running a large, substantial healthcare firm and somebody that's building homes. It's sort of neat. Mark.
Dan, why did you major in psychology in college?
I didn't have a singular purpose when I went to college, and I had the opportunity to try a variety of different areas on an introductory level, and psychology is the one that seemed most interesting to me at the time.
How does that help you now?
Well, I you know, again, I'm dealing a lot with people, so there's a positive of having learned some of the psychological aspects of dealing with individuals. But, you know, much like my father, I don't have a formal business background, so I got to where I am today a lot by observing and learning on the job, and then taking that all away and putting it together in one larger outcome.
Peter?
Dan, how important is it for the team, your team, to look like the member population and relate to them in a very visceral way?
Diversity and inclusion is a topic that we are constantly talking about, constantly trying to find ways to build on. Not just diversity, inclusion in terms of people, but thought. It's very important to have diverse thought, so when you are dealing with complex problems, you're having a diverse input to that problem.
What's the best part of your day? What's the best part of your day? What do you enjoy the most about what you're doing for a living?
The best part of my day, I think, is first of all, the diversity of what I do from moment to moment, but interacting with the people that challenge me. Because of the differences that occur from moment to moment.
So you really enjoy, you're like the master manager, understanding everything that's going on all the time, figuring out what the real priorities are. You know, you're like, you got a lot of things to be on top of, the changing healthcare scene. Just a lot of things that, do you end up having to work on the weekends? Do you have to work on the weekends?
I'm working all the time, but not constantly. So, mm-hmm. you know, there will be weekdays in the afternoons where I'll be doing something that is not engaged in work. But then, mm-hmm. 9 o'clock last night, I was on the phone dealing with a work issue because that was the best time and the best place to do it.
Does work feel like work to you?
It doesn't feel like work. It's more embedded into kind of my day-to-day.
So you sort of enjoy the mastery of managing all this and figuring out these solutions and getting everything moving in the right directions.
I do, especially when it all comes to a point of where you could see the effort come to a final result. It takes a long time sometimes, and it's not always positive. I think the one thing that I liked about the nails is that you could really quickly get closure and order. You know, you go into a room, and real quickly you can do it, and you would get the closure, the order, and the accomplishment of the success of that.
So you don't need. It's nice to get immediate gratification, but it's not absolutely necessary for you. So you're able to take a longer timeline. But it sounds to me like one of the real skills you've got is pulling together people, getting them on the same page, so you can get so you can eventually get to that result.
Yeah, knowing what the end result should be or what it's going to look like helps because. You know what all this is going to end up with, and it helps with the patience to get there.
It sounds to me it's just like your dad building a house. You know, it's like it's nice when the house is finally completed. It just takes a lot of time. There's a lot of people. You need to get a lot of things different done.
Well, it's nice when it's completed. It's better when it's sold. But yeah.
What's the website address of this organization known as the United Healthcare of Pennsylvania and Delaware?
UHC.com.
Let me have that one more time, please.
UHC.com.
We've been speaking with Dan Tropiano, CEO of United Healthcare of Pennsylvania and Delaware, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website. It's executiveleadersradio.com. To learn more about our executive leaders, it's executiveleadersradio.com. To learn more about our executive leaders, and we will be back in a moment right after this business spotlight. And your name and organization?
Josh Silverbauer, Grew & Bleen.
And how do you help your clients, Josh?
We help them by organizing their data, building websites, helping them track things on their websites, and helping them with digital marketing.
So how young were you when you began playing with puzzles?
I was about 2 years old.
And what kind of puzzles did you play with, and how long did that continue for?
I started with jigsaw puzzles, and then I got into logic puzzles, and from there, cryptograms and code.
I'm wondering what did those puzzles teach you about building your business and helping your clients?
There's infinite moving pieces in life and in business, and understanding that things aren't just one way, and understanding that things move together and piece together really helped me understand how to help
them. I guess you're also helping your clients stay on top of the ever-changing digital landscape. What's the website address for your firm?
GrueAndBleen.com.
Give me the spelling of that real quick.
GrueAndBleen.com.
This has been your Business Spotlight. I'd like to introduce Dr. Joyce Russell, who is the Dean of the Villanova School of Business. And I understand that the Villanova School of Business recently received some very special recognition. What's that all about?
That's right. We were ranked number one for undergraduate business school in the nation, as well as in the top 10 for our graduate programs, our online programs, and our part-time programs.
You were ranked number one. What's it take to do that? What's it take to achieve the number one ranking?
I think you have to have really strong faculty. We recruit great students, and we have really good outcomes, so that over 99% of our students get jobs within 6 months. They have great salaries. They have great signing bonuses, and so the outcomes are really important.
Wait, what do you like about your job? I mean, what's it like to be a dean? What do you enjoy about what you're doing?
Well, I absolutely love Villanova School of Business because it's this is a mission-based school. So our view is that we are not just another business school. We're a business school that has purpose, and our purpose is building business leaders for a better world. So whatever we can do to have them not only have really strong academic skills and professional skills, but to make a difference in the world today.
Do any of your previous student graduates ever come back to the school?
Absolutely. We have some here today who have been talking about some of the successes they've had. We have a lot of CEOs from the School of Business who have gone on to show that not only can they build a very successful business, whether it's in finance or accounting, marketing, et cetera, but that they can actually have an impact in terms of the world and making it a better place.
Wow. So you have students that have graduated that are CEOs of businesses that come back and help influence the kids and really make a difference, not just in terms of building a business, but purpose. What's the website address of the Villanova School of Business?
It's business.villanova.edu.
Let me have that one more time.
Business.villanova.edu.
And we've been speaking with Dean Russell, Villanova School of Business. Want help building your business with help from this show's CEOs? Our CEOs can help you uncover more opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that, succeeding in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars. And some are available to advise you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. The same CEOs you've heard on the show for 10 years may be willing to help you build your business, uncover new opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that, succeeding in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars. Some of the CEOs who have appeared on our shows over the last 10 years may be willing to help you grow, assuming you're serious about your success, serious about your own success, because it all starts with the leader. If you're serious about creating your own successful business, or truly committed to putting your nose to the grindstone and doing whatever it takes to make your business successful, we may be able to match you with successful CEOs who have created millions of jobs and earned millions of dollars to help you create your success. We've established unique relationships with a unique universe of over 7,000 CEOs who have created substantial wealth for their companies, their teams, and themselves. These women and men get the build in their blood and often continue to start and build businesses even after they've created substantial wealth for themselves because they love the challenge of building a business. Perhaps we can present you and your business to some of these CEOs to gain their interest in helping you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. To hopefully match you with some of the CEOs we've had on the show for the last 10 years. mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohn. We'd like to introduce Elizabeth Convery, founder of Very Real Estate. Elizabeth, what is Very Real Estate?
Very Real Estate is a boutique residential real estate brokerage firm based in Center City, Philadelphia. We help people with the largest purchase of their life.
What do you mean? What's the largest purchase of their life?
Most people, for the consumer, the largest purchase, most expensive purchase they'll ever make is buying a home.
I see. All right. So when did this business get started?
Very Real Estate was started in 2013.
And how'd you get a job with this company?
I started it myself.
Oh, you started the business. Where are you from originally?
Washington Township, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. How many brothers and sisters?
I have a younger brother.
All right, Mary Pat.
Elizabeth, how young were you when you started making money?
I can't remember a time I wasn't. I was probably 8 years old when I started my first real, what I thought was a real business.
What was that?
We were making signs, personalized signs for the kids in the neighborhood. We had these pieces of wood, and we learned how, my best friend and I learned how to make Play-Doh. Mm. And so we would roll the Play-Doh into the shapes of letters and affix them to these signs. And sell them for who knows how much. Probably too much.
And also, in your childhood, you were a ballerina?
I was. I studied ballet since the age of 4 all the way through high school.
And tell us a little bit about that. What, anything happen as a ballerina?
I loved to dance. I was not always the best dancer, but I always worked hard to learn the routines and to learn all of the French names for the steps. I took that very seriously.
And what about point?
I went on point probably around the age of 10, which was a little young for that. But
so why did you go on point before you needed to? Or what was that about?
It was the next challenge, and I wanted to try it, and so they let me.
Mm-hmm. So what happened?
I found out years later that I went on too early and sustained an injury that I actually never knew I had.
So you're able to put your mind to something. Sometimes it hurts, but you just keep on rocking and rolling.
Yes.
Drew.
Yeah, speaking of hard work and putting your mind to something, you told us in the green room that you trained and completed a half marathon.
I did. So I have a lot of friends who are runners, and they were all talking about how much they loved running, and I thought, well, what the heck do they like about running? I mean, I don't really understand. So I could really not run more than a mile, so I thought, well, why don't I sign up for a half marathon and train for it and see what all this running thing is about?
And how did that go? How did that training go?
It was great. I completed my first half marathon, and I did it in around 2 hours, so my time was awesome. But
and how did you feel crossing the finish line?
It was fantastic. It felt great to accomplish that goal, but I was actually in a lot of pain.
Yeah, and what does training for and competing in an endurance sport like a marathon have to do with running a business?
Well, it's a lot of structure. It's a lot of discipline. You have to set a plan for your training, and you actually have to stick with it, or the results are not favorable.
And just one other question. What do you think about for 13 miles?
I listen to a lot of music, listen to some podcasts, and, you know, I don't know.
How long did it take you to get from 1 mile to 13 miles in your training?
I trained, let's see, so I signed up for it right after Labor Day, mm-hmm. and the race was mid-November, so what is that, 10 weeks, I guess I trained?
You went from 1 to 10 to 13 miles in 10 and a half weeks.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Frank, next question, please.
Elizabeth, I'm curious, what was your role within your family?
I was the oldest child and actually the oldest grandchild on my dad's side.
And what role did you play?
I guess I would say I was the organizer.
What do you mean?
I just remember as a kid, I would always get my cousins involved in some kind of a play or some kind of a show that we would put on for the parents.
Like what kind of play or what kind of show? What are you talking about?
We would do a variety show, right? So there were three girls and three boys. I was the oldest, and my cousin Justin was the youngest, and there were only 5 years between us. So we really grew up like brothers and sisters.
Whose idea was this?
It was always my idea.
Uh-huh. And who was organizing everybody?
It was me.
Uh-huh. So what was everybody's reaction to what you did to your cousins?
They loved it. I mean, even now, it's funny, we see the second generation, the great-grandchildren, and now they're putting on little shows at Christmas, and it's become kind of a funny tradition. Uh-huh. But we look back on family videos, and you see, like, people rolling their eyes. Oh, no, not another performance. We weren't the best at what we did, but we still
moved
forward and did
your thing. Mark.
Elizabeth, what did your mother tell you about your grades?
My mom shared with me recently, she said, you know, Elizabeth, when you were little, Dad and I never had to lecture you on not getting great grades because you were really hard on yourself when you got a B+.
What do you mean you were really tough on yourself? What are you talking about?
I would go to them and say, can you believe I got a B+, and I need to work harder next time, and then I would up my studying.
All right, so we have three in a row. We have the fact you went on point a little too quickly and hurt yourself as a ballerina. You ended up going with this half marathon in 10 and a half weeks from 1 mile to 10, which I've never heard of before. And we hear that you're really tough on yourself in terms of these grades. So you're putting a lot of heat on yourself. Peter?
Elizabeth, you took a master's degree from the best hotel school maybe in the world. Yet you're not in hospitality now, or presumably. Tell us why.
I think I am in hospitality now. I think that the core of hospitality is care for others and listening to what they need and anticipating their needs and giving it to them.
So I observed you listening to the other guests' stories, nodding your head and really engaged. Where did you develop that habit of listening carefully?
You know, I don't know. That's a really good question. I'm not sure where that came from. I just know that I've always had it. I like to find a way to relate to everyone. I think that...
Are you more like mom or dad?
I'm more like mom.
What do you mean?
My mom is very disciplined. We always laugh that she's a type A, I'm a type A, my dad's a type C. So, personality-wise.
Who's the intuitive one, mom or dad?
My dad's more intuitive.
Sounds to me like you're like between your mom and dad, you're picking up the stuff about people by listening and, you know, understanding who they really are. And you guys are both, sounds like your mom's pretty well organized, mm-hmm. but your dad's got the intuition going on.
I think I'm a good combination of the two.
Uh-huh. So you're in the business of residential real estate. What do you like about what you do for a living?
I came from a background actually in commercial real estate, and I switched to residential real estate because I realized in my late 20s I wasn't money motivated and closing big commercial deals. Everybody makes a lot of money, and that's great. But what I realized was that I love helping people. And in residential real estate, I still get to participate in the transaction side of the business, which I love, but I also help people to, as cheesy as it sounds, realize a dream. You know, the dream of home ownership and finding them the right property for their lifestyle is something that I just love every day.
I'm trying to figure out the connection between this little girl at 10 that was like really pressing herself, also considering what you were doing to yourself, pressing yourself for the grades, and also being able to run this half marathon in 10 and a half weeks of training. That seems like you're pretty self-motivated. And on the other hand, it sounds like you like serving people. I'm trying to figure all that stuff out in terms of how it plays out in your career. What do you mean?
Well, I decided to start Very Real Estate and get into the residential space as an owner rather than working for another large brokerage shop because I wanted to change the game. I wanted to give, you know, a human face to it and to show that you can combine those things. You can be disciplined and want to build a business, but you can also have that human side of it for...
Elizabeth, what happened 4 weeks ago?
I got married.
Tell us about that. Who did you marry?
I married an amazing man who I actually met through real estate, which is kind of funny.
Was he your client?
Not when we started dating.
I know you have those strict rules.
But yes, he was introduced to me through past clients. And he was relocating from San Diego to Philadelphia, was looking for a home. And so I helped him to find a property. And my client was his childhood best friend and suggested that we date. And I said, no, I can't do that. I mean, he's a client. So after he moved into his home, he called me and he said, well, I'm not your client. Can I take you on a date? Mm-hmm. 2 years later, to the day of our first date, we got married.
And what about the discipline? You said you met your match.
Yes, it's funny. So I always thought I was, my husband is in the Navy, and so I always thought I was very disciplined and structured until I met him, and I certainly have no match there.
Uh-huh. What have you learned from your husband that's helped you in business?
Leadership skills. I mean, I've always had leadership skills. I don't think you can start your own business without having them.
But wait a minute, but he was in the Navy, and you're in residential real estate. Mm-hmm. What are you talking about there?
Management of people. I mean, in the Navy, you know, you have a mission and mm-hmm. you have to accomplish it and you have
Excellent.
To figure out how you're going to do that and you have to get
That's
all
I
of
needed
your
to
team
know.
On the same page.
What's the website address of Very Real Estate?
It's verire.com.
Let me have that one more time.
Verire.com.
We've been speaking with Elizabeth Convery, founder of Very Real Estate here on Executive Leaders Radio. Peter, can you give us a rundown of who else we've had the opportunity
sure,
to speak with
today? Sure, great show today. We had Lisa Allmiller, founder, Housepaws Mobile Veterinary Service, Anuj Gupta, general manager, Reading Terminal Market, Dan Tropiano, CEO of United Healthcare of Pennsylvania and Delaware, and just now Elizabeth Convery, founder, Very Real Estate.
I'd like to thank my co-host, Mark Sullivan. Sonnenfeld, Morgan Lewis, Peter Snelling, Merrill Lynch, Andrew Hanlon, Hanlon Creative, Mary Pat Kessler, Sabre Systems, and Frank Acara from Alliant for giving me a hand structuring the questions, hopefully providing a listening audience an educational and entertaining show. I'd like to thank our listening audience for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. That's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. Thank you for joining us today, and have a nice day. Bye-bye.